Hi, I'm Dr. Marcia, and this is the Self-Care Chronicle. As a licensed psychologist, I know that I need to practice good self-care to maintain my mental wellness. But maintaining my self-care routine can be a struggle when things get hectic. So I started reaching out to my peers to ask them about their experiences with self-care, and I learned that many of my fellow mental health professionals have similar experiences. Join me each week as I connect with a fellow mental health professional to discuss the challenges of managing our own mental wellness in the midst of a pandemic, social unrest, increasing demand for our services, and a struggle to embrace a me-first ideology, which sometimes feels wrong to a helping professional. Welcome to the Self-Care Chronicle. Welcome back to the Self-Care Chronicle. This week, I'm connecting with Nigeria McKellen. Ms. McKellen is a licensed clinical therapist and the founder of New Perspectives Therapeutic Services. Ms. McKellen has an amazing story, and her excellent work can't be adequately discussed in this brief bio. So after the show, visit drmarciabrown.com for more info. And welcome, Nigeria McKellen. Thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. It's my pleasure. My first question is always, what was your journey into mental health? And by that, I mean, why did you choose to become a mental health professional? And once you chose to become a mental health professional, what was your journey like to the population that you now specialize in serving?
So my degree itself is in clinical social work. And so my story into how I journeyed into that career path is a really personal story. So when I was 16, my mom was dying from cancer. And me and my family, we would take shifts to be at the hospital to make sure that someone was always there with her. And one evening, it was my shift, and she was having a heart attack. And so the doctors pushed me out of the room. Everyone was coming in and stabilizer. And so I was only 16 at the time, and I was in the hallway by myself. My older siblings were at school and at work, at college and at work. And my dad was in the military at the time, and he had watch duty. And I remember sitting in the hallway, and this lady, it was a military base. So she came, she was dressed in all white, and she was a social worker. And she came and she was talking to me. She was telling me about the process of death and dying and what my mom was going through. And as I watched my mom transition, the things that that social worker had taught me were so meaningful to my experience at the time. And so I ended up going to college, pursued a degree in social work, and I was exposed to the career of mental health through social work. And so I did social work stuff, case management, dependency, things like that for a while. And then as I grew into graduate level work and eventually got licensed, I continued on through the journey of mental health care. And so when you talk about the population and how I got into the space that I am today, I went through a few different paths as I kind of got acclimated to the world of mental health. I worked with children. I worked with adults. I worked with couples and families in various settings, outpatient settings. I was the clinician for human trafficking victims. I worked with Department of Juvenile Justice, substance abuse. And so I really gained a lot of knowledge in mental health and the need to have people that really advocated and worked hard to create a strong awareness about mental health care. And so over time, I developed a desire to pursue private practice. And so I opened up my private practice and I started working with the Black community. And I was very intentional about that over time because I started to recognize the gaps in meeting those needs for the Black community over time and how limited access to mental health services had become. And so that's kind of how I got into social work and mental health and how I started to cultivate a practice that was truly focused on serving people of color.
Wow. That's an amazing story. The journey of just how such an early experience with your mom and with losing her and also encountering the social worker mm-hmm. that early on. Can you say a little bit more about at that point? Was it when you decided that you wanted to do that because you encountered that the social worker that helped you during that time?
I think it was at that point I knew I wanted to go into a profession where the impact and my encounters with people would be meaningful because I understood at that young age how meaningful that experience was for me. And so even now, years later, to still be able to reflect on that experience and relate to that experience having shaped my goals, my professional goals, is still meaningful, right? It has a lasting impact on the things that I've done 2 decades later. And so I think I got into the field of social work itself because of that experience. And it was through my exposure in social work that I really started to form a understanding of, okay, social work. Okay, then you can go on to a path of mental health. And so I think the experiences themselves kind of led me to this place, almost like little pieces of the puzzle, right? Everything coming together to end up to this one common place.
Absolutely. That's really interesting. Can you talk a little bit about the most stressful thing about your job?
Most stressful? I would say having to set boundaries because, you know, you want to help everybody. And I think it can be stressful when you want to help everybody, but you're unable to do it all yourself. So I think it is stressful for me when I have to tell somebody no, or I have someone that calls and they really want the service and they really want to engage, but I have to be really firm about the boundaries that I have in place for myself in terms of how many clients am I able to have at one time and what that looks like for me. And so I think it can be stressful having to tell people no, because some people will come and they're like, everybody has a waiting list, or I haven't connected to anybody else. I saw your profile. And so I think having to turn people away is stressful because you want to help everybody, right? And so I think having to set those boundaries and be firm and consistent with them can be stressful.
Can you talk a little bit about how COVID-19 has changed the way that you're able to deliver your services, if it has?
So, you know, a lot of things have turned into virtual services these days. And so what started out as face-to-face, doing face-to-face sessions, has now turned into a virtual practice. All of my clients are seeing virtually, and that has changed just the dynamics of the therapeutic relationship. It hasn't been a bad experience. I think it's been extremely convenient for people. And I think that has allowed more people to access services where transportation isn't a concern, or having a babysitter isn't a concern. Scheduling isn't a big concern. Some people I see on their lunch breaks because they can go to their car or they can go to a break room. And so the shift in how services are delivered has definitely changed how I deliver my services.
Right. And can you talk about if there was an adjustment for you with that change from a face-to-face with a person and the feeling that you were able to get reading signals, things like that? Was there any adjustment to having a screen between the two of you?
Yeah, I definitely think face-to-face not only allows the relationship to be more personable in those moments, but, you know, being able to assess a person's body language or being able to just greet them properly because of that face-to-face interaction has definitely changed. And I think from a clinical perspective, the biggest change has been that lack of assessment through like body language and that face-to-face interaction piece.
Right. Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. Can you talk a little bit about self-care for you?
Yeah, so self-care is something that we preach as clinicians to our clients, and it's something that we probably lack the most in our personal lives. And so with the pandemic, I had to be really, really intentional about implementing like true self-care habits in my routine. I'm a mother, you know, I run a business, and so I wear a lot of hats. And so self-care has been really, really important for me. I like to go for walks. I usually try to go for a walk for a couple miles in the morning. Obviously, I like to go get my nails and pedicures and massages whenever that opportunity is available. Listen to music, or really just some alone time, some quiet times, opportunities to pause and really allow myself to reset has been really purposeful for me in terms of self-care.
Okay. And has that changed any recently? I mean, like since the beginning of 2020, has your perspective on self-care changed, or have there been any shifts, anything like that?
Yeah, I think not just my perspectives, but I think how I have been able to implement it and what self-care looks like for me has changed. You know, typically before pre-COVID, I was able to visit friends. We were able to go have dinner, have lunch. So my social life has definitely been altered. And so my self-care that used to be spending time with friends and family has now become a solo thing. And so that's definitely shifted. But I think probably prior to COVID, I was able to have so many more options when it came to self-care. I think my options are limited now. I don't really go out a lot. I don't do a lot of things because of COVID. And so the things that I do allow myself to do, they're limited because of social distancing or just not wanting to be around a lot of people or in large crowds. And so my options are slim these days.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. So in terms of just all the things that we've been through more recently, 2020 was a really difficult year. We had the pandemic, which was just new to all of us. It was something that changed in all of our lives. I mean, the world over, that we had never experienced before. So it was all very new to everybody. We had all of the protests because of, you know, the social unrest, the problems with the injustice in our society in general. And then we were watching Black citizens who were unarmed be murdered in the streets for no reason or with very little provocation. And then we started to see this uptick in unprovoked violent attacks against Asians. And we had the terror attack at the Capitol. So we've had all these things in 2020 and 2021. Can you talk a little bit about any impact that has had on you as had on your mental health as a Black mental health professional?
You know, I think one of the things that all of these changes that have come to the forefront and all of these experiences that we've had to watch and live through, they opened up a lot of old wounds, I believe, for the Black community. And so one of the things that I noticed, and I'm going to answer your question, but I wanted to say this as well. One of the things that I recognized is I've gotten a huge increase in the amount of male clients that have come to me. And the reason why I say that I believe a lot of old wounds have been opened, I think that a lot of my male clients have come to me tired. You know, they have come to me tired of the injustices that are happening. They're tired of the judgments that they associate themselves with in terms of being Black in America. They come to me with these unhealed childhood things that are being opened back up because they're witnessing things. And so a lot of emotions are getting brought to the forefront again. And through those experiences, I think one of the things that has challenged me as a clinician is, you know, I work with people that are coming with, you know, they're depressed because of what they're seeing. They are experiencing anxiety and fear because of what they're seeing. They are traumatized because of what they're seeing and what they're experiencing via social media or things that are happening in their hometowns or someone they know were impacted. And so I work with these people. And the reality for myself is I have Black brothers. I have a Black son. I have Black friends, you know, and so I don't stop being Black because I start doing therapy or I enter a session, right? And when my client leaves, I don't stop being African-American either. I don't stop being Black during that time either. And so I too have witnessed these things, not just with males, but also with the females. And so I think for myself, it's challenged me in a way of having to understand how I'm impacted and how I choose to navigate through those experiences for myself. And I recognize that I am impacted, right? I recognize that I do have an opinion. I do have feelings and I do have emotions that I'm living through as I'm watching these same things that my clients are experiencing and witnessing and feeling about these experiences as well. And so I think awareness has been really important for me, like self-awareness, being really intentional about understanding my own feelings in that way. It's been really, really important. And so I don't know if I answered your question specifically, so you can restate it, but I wanted to put that out there.
Absolutely. Those are excellent points and super valid in terms of we are mental health professionals, but because we're mental health professionals doesn't mean we stop being who we are when we enter the room in therapy. Absolutely. And understanding what you're bringing to the table and what your own perspectives are and your experiences, how that impacts you in the room, mm-hmm. as well as just going through your everyday life. I think those are very excellent points. you mentioned that you're serving the Black community. And so as a Black mental health clinician, you can't separate yourself from all of the concerns, the anxieties, the fears that your clients are bringing to your doorstep, because those things are all valid for you. So in light of the fact that you can't disconnect from it in order to take care of yourself and in order to completely replenish your stores, how do you handle that?
Yeah, so I don't think that I personally try to disconnect. I think that I remain steady in who I am and I remain true to that. And I think the best thing that I can do of value for myself as well as for the clients that I work with is to keep awareness at the forefront. I think understanding what's going on in the world around us helps me be a better clinician in terms of serving clients who these experiences are very real for them. And they've impacted them in certain ways. And so I think understanding what's going on allows me, I think I try to do the opposite. I don't think I really try to disconnect. I think I try to stay as connected as possible because it allows me to be not just the best I can be in this work, but aware so that I can offer the best level of support to my clients who are watching these same things and experiencing these same things. And I think as far as disconnecting, I think it's like you said, it's almost impossible to do because it's who I am too, right? It's a part of my history. It's a part of what I'm paying attention to for the children that I have and the children that I'm raising and the life that I'm living. And I think I try to stay as connected to that as possible for those meaningful reasons.
And can you talk about, do you think you are ever really able to reset completely in terms of you practice self-care, you do these things to take care of yourself, whether it's taking a walk, whatever the case may be? Do you feel like you ever fully really reset yourself to zero, psychologically, physically, emotionally, spiritually, anything like that?
I think I am capable and I do reset myself in terms of like emotionally and physically. I think the psychological piece is a little more difficult. I think more than anything, I give myself opportunities to pause. I think pausing and reflecting are extremely important for me because the reflection piece allows me to put things into greater perspective. And then I think the pause piece allows me to let it all sink in, sort it out, and figure out how to deal with it in a way where it's not overwhelming and I don't get burnt out. And so I think resetting is possible in some situations, and then pause and reflecting is kind of more realistic to others.
Are there any other challenging parts of self-care for you in terms of any recurring obstacles that come up that make it challenging for you to practice good self-care on a regular basis?
Of course. I told you I have 3 kids.
Yes.
So consistency can be very difficult because you have somebody's not behaving today, or somebody's not feeling well, or somebody has schoolwork to get done and their priorities are my priorities, right? And so I'm always going to prioritize their needs before my own. And so although I know you can't give pieces of yourself without taking care of yourself in that way, I think as a mother, like that just is going to always be my thing. Their priorities and their needs are going to be put before my own. And so I think the challenge for me sometimes becomes consistency, but I am very, very intentional about self-care. I think it's one of the best things that we can do for ourselves. And it's so needed and it's so vital and it's so essential to our whole wellness and our whole well-being. I think we have to be intentional about it, right? We have to find ways to be more and more consistent with it. And so consistency can be a challenge, but it's something that I think I've been able to work through. Although I put their needs before my own, I think I have figured out ways to still prioritize my self-care and make sure their needs are met. And so I think even though consistency can become a challenge, I have found ways to kind of tweak things so that I still can get some self-care in there. It may not be 30 minutes today or an hour today, but it may be 15 minutes. You know, it may just be 20 minutes, but it's some versus none. And so I think just being consistent can sometimes be a challenge, but you readjust and figure it out.
Excellent. I think it's a really good point, the whole idea of some versus none. I think, especially with self-care, it's important that we're flexible and we don't have an all or nothing attitude, and that right. Every little bit counts towards helping us to replenish our stores and helping us to keep going every right. day with all right. the stuff that we have to handle and all the stuff we have to take care of.
Yeah, and I think it's important to find which methods of self-care replenishes you the most. Is it things that feed your spirit and feed your soul? Is it eating healthy? You know, so I try to drink more water. I try to eat better. I try to get a little bit of exercise. Is it listening to good music or soothing sounds? And so I think also identifying what's most purposeful for you in terms of taking care of yourself and then implementing that in the best ways possible.
Yeah, those are really good points. Whatever works for you and those small changes add up to huge rewards, I think. Can you talk a little bit more about your practice, any upcoming projects or events that you have, anything like that?
So my practice, I don't even know if we said the name, New Perspectives Therapeutic Services, located in Jacksonville, Florida. Right now we are doing a series of groups. We have a group for teens, a group for women, and a group for men that is currently going on. We will be doing those throughout the year sporadically, so you can pay attention to my Instagram and also subscribe on my website to be notified whenever those groups pop up. It'll be different dates throughout the year. So my Instagram handle is @new.perspectives.therapy. And my website is newperspectivestherapeuticservices.com. On my website, you can chat with me directly, send an email, and also call me through that website. Again, that's newperspectivestherapeuticservices.com. And my Instagram is @new.perspectives.therapy.
Thank you so much. This has been incredibly informative, and I've really enjoyed this. I don't know if you've had a chance to listen to the podcast just yet, but the final thing that I do is called the finisher. And that is just a random question that has nothing to do with psychology or mental health or self-care. It's just random because I like asking people random questions, basically. So let's see. For you, what are the top three destinations on your travel bucket list?
As soon as COVID is over. Will it ever be over? I think that's the question. Will it ever be over? Will we just adjust?
Yes, it will. At some point, we're going to go back to something. I don't know. I don't know what.
You know, as soon as things are safe and I'm comfortable with traveling again, let's say that I plan to visit Jamaica. That is just on my list right now, Jamaica. I also want to visit Canada. And California is on my list as well.
Okay, nice. Anywhere in Canada in particular or just Canada?
Yeah, just Canada. Nowhere in particular.
Okay, yeah. Cool. Very cool. Let's see. Do you know what the zombie apocalypse is?
No.
Well, in zombie movies and TV shows, what happens is there's usually some kind of contagion or illness that spreads everywhere and wipes out most of the population. But there are survivors that are unharmed. And then there are also zombies. So they're basically like the undead that just walk the earth and like go around biting humans. And so at the beginning of the zombie apocalypse, most of the survivors have to decide whether they're going to secure food, shelter, or weapons first, right? And you can only go after one. So the second hypothetical for you is it's the beginning of the zombie apocalypse.
Okay.
You can only focus on one thing to secure for yourself at a time. Would it be food, shelter, or weapons, and why?
I'm going two different directions with this. My first
mind, really? Okay.
No, part of my mind is telling me, go for the food, you know, eat. You have to eat to survive. But then the other part of me is saying, get weapons, right? You can get your food that way. You can eliminate some people. You can stay safe. And so I don't know. I think I'll go with weapons.
Weapons. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Weapons. And tell me why again. Why weapons?
You can overpower some people and take their food. So you get your food.
Okay.
You can stay safe. You know, I can protect my family. I can protect my kids. I can make sure they have food, even if it means taking from other people to survive. That's not very nice, but we're talking about survival. We're talking about survival. So I'm thinking like, how are we going to get through this, right? And so I'm thinking weapons. You know, I can defend, I can overpower, I can make some things happen with some weapons.
Okay. All right. I like that. That is an incredibly honest response. I can take over some people. I like it. Okay. Very cool. Thank you so much again for taking the time to sit down and talk to me, Nigeria McKellen. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for joining me for the Self-Care Chronicle. If you enjoyed today's show, please go to Apple Podcasts and leave a review. Also, be sure to subscribe to the Self-Care Chronicle on your favorite podcast platform. To find out more about today's episode, or to listen to additional episodes, visit drmarshabrown.com. See you next time.